వేదాంత స్వామినిధిని. నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవే, గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే, నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశకారిణి, జై శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందం. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ. సో థ్యాంక్ యూ ఆల్ వెరీ మచ్ ఫర్ జాయినింగ్ టుడేస్ సెషన్. వీ హ్యావ్ బిన్ డిస్కసింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద బుక్ భక్త్యాలోక బై శ్రీల భక్తి వినోద్ ఠాకూర్, విచ్ వాస్ ఇన్ లీడ్ కలెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ఎస్ రిటర్న్ బై శ్రీల భక్తి వినోద్ ఠాకూర్ ద సజ్జన తోషిణి మ్యాగజైన్, విచ్ వాస్ లేటర్ కంపైల్డ్ బై ద గౌడియా మఠ్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ బుక్ భక్త్యాలోక. భక్త్యాలోక మీన్స్ ఇల్యూమినేషన్స్ ఆన్ భక్తి, భక్తి ఆలోక. సో దిస్ ఇస్ బేసికలీ కలెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ఎస్సేస్ ఆన్ ద సిక్స్ ఫేవరబుల్ అండ్ సిక్స్ అన్ఫేవరబుల్ ఐటమ్స్ ఫర్ ప్రాక్టీసింగ్ భక్తి. అత్యాహార ప్రయాసశ్చ ప్రజల్పో నియమాగ్రహ జనసంగశ్చ లౌల్యం చ షడ్బేర్ భక్తి వినశ్యతి. సిక్స్ థింగ్స్ దట్ డిస్ట్రాయ్ వన్స్ భక్తి. ఆల్రెడీ సీన్ దోస్ సిక్స్ ఎస్సేస్ అండ్ ద సిక్స్ ఫేవరబుల్ థింగ్స్: ఉత్సాహాన్ నిశ్చయాత్ ధైర్యాత్ తత్తత్కర్మ ప్రవర్తనాత్ సంగత్యాగాత్ సతో వృత్తే షడ్బీర్ భక్తి ప్రసిద్ధ్యతి. సిక్స్ ఫేవరబుల్ థింగ్స్ ఫర్ ప్రాక్టీసింగ్ భక్తి, ఇన్ విచ్ వీ హ్ ఆల్రెడీ డిస్కస్డ్ ఉత్సాహ, అండ్ ఫర్ ద లాస్ట్ ఫ్యూ వీక్స్ వీ హ్ బిన్ డిస్కసింగ్ ఆన్ ద థీమ్ ఆఫ్ నిశ్చయ. సో బిఫోర్ ఐ కంటిన్యూ ఫ్రమ్ వేర్ వీ లెఫ్ట్ ఆఫ్, ఐ విల్ రిక్వెస్ట్ రాధా ప్రమోద్ ప్రభు టు గో recap of what we have seen till now, and then we'll take it forward from there. Over to you, Guru.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nilitam Yen Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So we discussed last time on Nishchaya. We are continuing the topic of Nishchaya. In that we are discussing the Dashamoola Tattvas, and we are discussing the fifth Dashamoola Tattva. Jivas are part of Krishna and are innumerable. Now the living entities are manifested by a portion of spiritual energy. Now jivas are not fully spiritual. Tatastha Shakti jivas are incomplete spirit, and that's why they get illusioned. Thus, the living entities are divided into two categories. First are those searching for their own happiness, and the other category of those searching for Krishna's happiness. And those searching for Krishna's happiness are called Nityamukta, and those who are searching for their own happiness are Nityabaddhas. And then we had very elaborate discussion on how we cannot understand at our level why we are in this situation, and there are certain questions we cannot understand, jiva fall and other things, and this is very important discussion we had, and this actually basically helps us to overcome that doubt, then we can enthusiastically practice Krishna consciousness. That's why we need to understand this nicely, this concept. And we cannot understand the jiva fall down issues. All inconceivable nature are under the subordination of spiritual time. And the time factor of the spiritual nature is a state of eternal present. So for us, it will be a little difficult to understand what it is. But in the inferior illusion energy, there are three states of existence: past, present and future. What it exactly means to be always in present is difficult. So whatever consideration arises in this regard, if related with the spiritual time factor, then no doubts will remain. But if seen otherwise, then doubts will remain. So if we see from that perspective, we will not have doubts. And why did a pure spirit soul search for his own happiness? If one puts forward such a question, then doubts arises from the material time factor will manifest. And if one can give up such doubts, then he can perform devotional service. Otherwise, there will only be a series of arguments. like we had the example, like sometimes some questions we will not have answer at this level, but we can get answers at a higher level. Like when we are in maybe third, fourth class, and when you are seeing some student in the 10th class or 12th, their cos x, divide x of cos x or sin x. So when we are seeing how alphabets are there in mathematics, so if the answer is given, oh, you say you are in third, fourth class. If you come to 8th class, 9th class, then you will understand. So even though he didn't get the answer for it, but his his doubt got clarified in one level, because he understood that I'll understand when I reach there. Similarly in bhakti also, then you may not get answer for it, but you will be free from that doubt, and that will help us to enthusiastically practice bhakti. So this is also, the answer is in that way, at our level we will not be able to understand. If arguments are related to the inconceivable nature, then anarthas arises. So we need not have answers for every questions to resolve some doubts. We should just understand that at our present state, these doubts cannot be resolved. So this much understanding we should have now presently. And we must continue to practice devotional service with confidence and determination, understanding that at our level we cannot understand, like engineering, mathematics and all. At 8th and 9th class we cannot understand, but we will know that I will understand when I reach that level. Similarly, these questions are also, when we reach a certain spiritual maturity, we will understand them. So in that way, we are free from doubt and enthusiastically practice Krishna consciousness. That was the discussion. And then we had then the sixth topic of Nitya Baddha Jiva accepts Maya and suffers in this world. So the problem with Tatastha Jiva is their proximity to Maya. So then what happens? Bhayam dvitiyad abhinivesha ishadapetasya viparyayosmiti. Ishadapetasya. The jiva turns away from Krishna. What happens? Maya catches. So viparyayosmiti, and makes him identify with the body and makes him forget his constitutional nature. So abhinivesha tasyat ishadapetasya viparyayosmiti. And tan mayatam abhajit. And jiva suffers the duality and samsara. And what happens? They enjoy happiness and distress under the grip of material time. And karma is nothing but a blind wheel created by Maya. Just we are operated by this, and we are action and reaction are happening. The living entity who are searching for their own pleasure receive from the wheel of Maya gross and subtle bodies as a means to enjoy. And then we have the living entities who are under the blind wheel of Maya called Nitya Baddha, like that. And then we had this discussion. Then the seventh is the Nitya Mukta Jiva is free of influence of material nature. Now there is a discussion on Nitya. So Nitya is of three different things according to the context. So when you say Nitya, Nitya means Anadi, that means without beginning, and Ananta, so and without end. So this is the living entity. So without beginning and without end. And also Nitya means Adi plus Ananta. It has a beginning and but no end. Example, liberation. And once you get liberated, but after that you are eternal. That's why it is Nitya. And also Nitya means Anadi plus Anta. He has no beginning, but at the end there has an end. So this is for the karma and bondage. So living entities, they come into this material world, but their karma can end. So it has no beginning, but it has an end. Liberation, it has a beginning but no end, and the living entity, the soul, no end and no beginning. So all three are Nitya. Karma is Nitya, liberation is Nitya, bondage is Nitya. And then we have, by the mercy of sadhus, mahajans and Krishna, and by the strength of many lifetimes of pious activities in devotional service, the conditioned souls achieve auspiciousness. So how it happens? So there are different stages of bhakti. And Vishwanath Chakur Thakur, it gives from Satam Krupa, then Mahat Seva, Ajnat Sukriti, Shraddha in Bhakti, and then Sadhu Sangha, and then Rati, and this ends the samsara. So this is how it starts. First is Satam Krupa. And then by the strength of his devotional service. So we have Adho, Shraddha, Tata, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, this category, and further some more things are added by Vishwanath Chakra Thakur, like Satam Krupa and Mahat Seva and Ajnat Sukriti. And then by the strength of his devotional service and Krishna's mercy, the living entity cuts the bondage of Maya and attains Krishna's service. And then by the Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna, the Buddha Mukta Jivas, those who achieve freedom from bondage easily attain the abode of Krishna with those who have never entered into Maya. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, bro. Very nice summary. So, yes, so we have been discussing on this topic of Nishchaya, and in Nishchaya we have been I will add some additional points before we continue this discussion from where we left off. So yeah, so we have been discussing about the essence of endeavoring with confidence is to overcome doubts. And proper sambandha gyan or knowledge actually helps one overcome the doubts. So because the problem with doubt is that so he talks about three categories, if you remember. Samshayatma is the, as we discussed before, the cynical insider. So the cynical insider is a dangerous person. So ultimately, not only is proper sambandha gyan important, definitely proper sambandha gyan is very important, proper experience in Krishna consciousness is also very important. And sometimes proper sambandha gyan is absolutely relevant, especially to process unfavorable experiences in bhakti. Like, how do you resolve like an inappropriate behavior from a devotee can be faith shaking. But when you have the proper understanding that every devotee, the anartha nivritti is a gradual process. So even if you may sometimes see a devotee smoking cigarette, right? So one need not lose one's faith by looking at it. Many times when we are unable to process unfavorable experiences in bhakti, then it leads to shaking up of our faith. So therefore, on one level, we have the responsibility to do two things: to give proper experience to people, to devotees and non-devotees alike, so that their faith is not shaken. And second is to give them the proper knowledge, nourish them with proper knowledge, because you can ensure that you will behave properly, but you cannot ensure that the whole devotee community around you will behave properly and give that person a favorable experience. So therefore, in order to digest and internalize and properly progress on the path of devotional service while not getting disturbed by those unfavorable experiences, one needs to get the vision of the Shastra. Shastra Chakshu is very important. So therefore, resolving doubts is absolutely important to progress with confidence on the path of bhakti or any other path for that matter. So then we discussed that as long as doubts are there, firm conviction cannot remain in the heart. Therefore, faithful living entities are always doubtless. And then in order to be doubtless proper knowledge is needed, and knowledge is divided, the knowledge of the Shastra is divided into three categories according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. And the Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana are divided into 10 subject matters, which is called as Dashamula Tattva. So of which the first Tattva is that the Vedas are the principal evidence. Pratyaksha Praman and Anuman Praman are incapable of resolving, of giving a proper understanding about subject matters which are transcendental to sensory perception. Okay, so therefore, Shabda Praman, which is the Vedic authority, one has to accept. Okay, so till one reaches the stage of, you know, where one can experience time, as we saw later, when one becomes qualified to experience spiritual time, then there is no more utility of scriptures. We need not see through the eyes of the scriptures, because we will develop eyes to see physically that realm, the transcendental realm, the realm of transcendence. Only till we acquire the transcendental vision do we need the aid of the scriptures. Once we gain that, then it is all pratyaksha. We don't need a shabda anymore. Because whatever is shabda is pratyaksha for us. Okay. So, then the most important point that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicates here is, all the natures that exist in this world are divided into two categories, which are inconceivable and conceivable. So material natures are conceivable, but spiritual nature is inconceivable, because we do not have the transcendental vision to see spiritual natures. And if we also lack faith in the Shastras, which can bridge that inability, then it becomes very difficult. So such people are called as people with poor fund of knowledge. So spiritual natures cannot be known without self-realization. This is a very important sutra we were discussing. So like that. So there, because pratyaksha and anumana are incapable of explaining transcendental, we are dependent on shabda. So or one should have self-realization, which means one has to be at the stage of work. But because self-realization is impossible for ordinary people or even ordinary devotees, therefore Krishna has created the scriptures to bridge the material self and the spiritual reality. So like that. Then we saw that we should accept the Vedic authority to understand the inconceivable nature. And then the most important aspect of approaching the Vedas is to understand that the Vedas speak in terms of adhikar. There are different instructions for people with different qualifications. Therefore, one should know which literatures are meant for whom. Okay. So among all the qualifications, qualification for devotional life is the topmost. So therefore, Mahajano Yena Gatasapanta, we have to accept from the Mahajans what are the literatures or what are the specific instructions of the Shastras which are meant for practicing devotees. Okay. So therefore, the Vedic statements ascertained by the previous Mahajans as relating to qualifications for devotion, that is called a Samman. We are not expected to follow every single instruction of the Vedas. The Vedas apaurusheya. They are directly coming from the Supreme Lord. No doubt about it. But that does not mean every single statement of the Vedic scriptures are meant to be followed by us. It is not meant for everyone. Okay. So, so then we discussed that how this is explained through a parable in the Chaitanya Charitamrit, where you know, don't go to the southern side, don't go to the western side, don't go to the northern side, but if you little scratch on the eastern side, you will get that pressure, like that. So so therefore you know, with these kind of parables it is described. So for which means, don't go to karma, don't go to jnana, don't go to yoga, and follow the teachings of bhakti, like that. So then these shastras speak about 9 essential realities, okay, of which 7 are sambandha gyan, one is abhideya gyan, one is prayojana gyan, and the first 3, as we saw, are about the Supreme Lord. The first thing is how Lord Hari is the only worshipable Lord, okay, and he is perceived by people with the qualifications as either Brahman or Paramatma or Bhagavan. Those who are very spiritually myopic, they understand Lord Hari as Brahman, and those who are little more spiritually advanced, they are able to understand the absolute truth as Paramatma, and those who are spiritually perfect vision, they are able to conceive of the absolute truth as Bhagavan, right? So he says that by discussing the truth about the omnipotent Lord Hari, all of one's doubts regarding the Supreme Lord are cleared. Until these doubts are cleared, one cultivates the knowledge by discussing impersonal Brahman as opposite to material knowledge. So so doubts regarding the Supreme Lord has to be cleared. Otherwise, if it is not cleared, then one will be stuck up with impersonal knowledge or knowledge of the Paramatma. But only when one is freed from all doubts, he has unflinching devotion to Krishna. Shraddha shabde vishwasa kohi sudrida nischay. Krishna bhakti kaile sarva karma krata hai. Like that. And the next principle is that Lord Hari is not only the absolute truth, but he is Sarva Shaktiman. He is full of inconceivable potencies. Okay. So, like that. And although the impersonal and personal potencies are contained within him, the personal potency is always predominant. Parasa Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate. The spiritual potencies are known as Samvit, Sandini and Vladini potencies. Like that. Then the next principle is that not only is Lord Hari all powerful, but he is also the reservoir of all spiritual rasas, Akhila Rasamrita Murti. So, so therefore, he says that by the power of rasa, both spiritual and material worlds become maddened. This is the constitution of Lord Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishta aham. I am the source of Brahman. Due to the power of rasa, there are unlimited varieties both in the material world and in the spiritual world. Rasa is the source of all variety. So, but the rasa in the spiritual world is pure, but the rasa in the material world is impure. It's just a shadow. So therefore, he says that by the Lord's inconceivable potency, the unlimited rasas of the spiritual world have been manifested in Gomoravan. And the pure spirit soul is eligible for this rasa. And to attain the supreme rasa is the duty of the living entity. And the means of attaining that rasa is actually sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is the means of attaining that rasa. Okay. So then he says, wow, there is no rasa in realizing Brahman or Paramatma. Rasa is there only in devotional service to Krishna. So these are the three realities with respect to the with respect to Bhagavan. Now there are three more realities with respect to the Jivatma. The Jivas are Tatastha Shakti of the Lord. They are separated part and parcels of the Supreme Lord. They are Amsha. So they are minute particles of the spiritual Son Krishna, and they are innumerable. The living entities are manifested by a portion of the spiritual energy, which means they are the living entities are not made of pure spirit. You know, there are gradations in spirit also, just like there is gradations in matter, there is gradations in spirit also. There is chit spirit and then there is tatastha spirit. So the living entities are made of tatastha spirit. So therefore they are capable of coming under the illusory potency of Maya. Okay, the living entity being a part and parcel of Krishna, being an amsha of Krishna, also has the qualities of Krishna. Some of the qualities of Krishna, or many of the qualities of Krishna in minute quantities, independence being one of those qualities. So therefore, because the living entities have independence, therefore they have multiple propensities. Different living entities have different propensities. Which can be divided into two prominent propensities. One propensity is to search for one's own happiness, and another propensity is to search for Krishna's happiness. Those who search for one's own happiness are called as Nitya Baddha living entities, and those who search after Krishna's happiness are called as Nitya Siddha or Nitya Mukta living entities. So therefore, we saw yesterday or last time this important sutra, that the inconceivable natures are under the subordination of spiritual time. There are certain aspects of reality which can be understood only if we enter into the realm of spiritual time, which happens when we reach the stage of self-realization. Okay, so that which can be understood only in the realm of spiritual time cannot be understood when a living entity is still under the influence of the material. So therefore, that which one can understand only under the realm of spiritual time, if one is adamant to understand it only under the realm of material time, then it will lead to doubts. Doubts will lead to arguments, and arguments will lead to anarthas. Like that. And the nature of spiritual time is that in spiritual time there is eternal present. There is experience of only eternal present. Whereas in material time, there is past, present and future. All three are experienced. So now what is this experience of eternal present? We will never be able to understand. For that, we have to reach the stage of self-realization. So therefore, whatever can be resolved only under the realm of spiritual time, if we try to resolve it in the realm of material time, it will lead to doubts. For example, it gives the example of why did the spirit soul search for his own happiness? Essentially, which means, why did the pure spirit soul turn his face away from Krishna? Not that there is no answer to this question, but the answer's question can be understood only in the realm of spiritual time. If you are trying to understand this on the realm of material time, then doubts will arise. If one cannot give up such, if one can give up such doubts, then he can perform devotional service. But if he cannot give it up, it will lead to arguments, and arguments related to these inconceivable natures will lead to anarthas. So therefore, as rightly mentioned by Radha Pramod Prabhu, we need not understand the answer for all the questions to overcome doubts. It is sufficient to even understand that at my level, I cannot process this answer. So that is good enough, actually. Even in the material realm, many of the subject matters we do not understand. And we accept that, okay, I don't understand, but there are other people who do understand. So that is good enough for me. I can move ahead. The world does not stop like that. Then the next reality is how amongst these Tatastha Jivas, one category are the Nitya Baddha Jivas who accept Maya and they suffer in this world, eternally bound living entities. So those living entities who have turned their face away from Krishna, Isha Dapetasya, Maya catches them, Tan Maya Yato, and they make the living entity identify with the body. And they make it forget its constitutional nature. So then the jiva suffers duality and samsara. So this is the thing. Okay. So these living entities, Nitya Baddha Jivas, they are jivas, certain thing, and then they have proximity to Maya, because of which they get caught. But otherwise, the Chit Shakti Jivas, which are completely under the realm of Chit Shakti, they have no proximity to Maya. Like that. So those who have not contacted Maya have no connection with karma. So the living entities who are searching for their own pleasure from the wheel of Maya, grass and subtle bodies as a means to enjoy. Okay. And the living entities who are under the realm of this wheel of Maya, they are called as Nitya Baddha living entities. But there are Nitya Mukta living entities also, which is the next principle, who are free from the influence of real nature. Okay. So we have to understand that in this regard, the word Nitya is applied with respect to material time. Then we saw there are different understandings of the word Nitya. So Anadi and Ananta, Anadi but Anta, Adi but Ananta, you know. So all are called as eternal or Nitya. So eternal can mean beginningless and endless, like the existence of the soul, or beginningless but has an end, like the bondage of the soul, or has a beginning but has no end, like the liberation of the soul. All are called as Nitya. Okay. But all of this, except for the nature of the soul, it has relevance. Bondage and liberation has relevance within the realm of material time. In the realm of spiritual time, there is nothing called bondage, and therefore there is nothing called liberation. Okay. So, when by the touch of spiritual substance, the spiritual time factor is awakened, then their conditioned nature is seen as temporary. Okay. Then the conditioned nature is seen as temporary. So, by the mercy of the sadhus, Mahat and Krishna, and by the strength of many lifetimes of pious activities, the conditioned soul achieves auspiciousness. That is faith in bhakti. Tatam kripa mahat seva agyat sukriti shraddha. You know, that is auspiciousness. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam, sadhu sangha leads to rati, rati leads to end of samsara. Like that. So, by the association of sadhus, material distress is vanquished. By the Krishna one attains fame, firm faith. Then by the strength of his devotional service and Krishna's mercy, the living entity cuts the bondage of Maya and attains Krishna's service. Okay. So, by the mercy of Krishna, the Baddha Mukta Jivas means who were initially bound, but later by the power of bhakti, they got liberated. They easily attain the planet of Vaikuntha or the abode of Krishna. Along with the, they join with the Nitya Muktas there. And they have never been searching for self-happiness, and they never had the proximity to Maya. So with them, they also go and cohabit there. So in this way, we have seen three principles about the Supreme Lord, the Absolute Truth, and three principles about the Jiva. Then the next is how Krishna and other things or energies are connected to Krishna by a relationship of Achintya Bheda Bhed, inconceivable oneness and difference. That is the next principle we are going to discuss now. But before we start that discussion, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add, you can please go ahead. Anything? Okay, if there is none, we will continue our discussion. So, the next principle, which is the last of the Sambandha Tattva, is about the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So, here, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that the conclusion of Amnaya regarding the sixth reality is this. Lord Krishna and all other things are connected by a relationship of Achintya Bheda Bheda, inconceivably, simultaneously, one and different. Okay. That is why the Vedas have many statements supporting oneness and many support a difference. Okay. The Vedic statements which support oneness are called as Abheda Shrutis. Okay. And the main statements which support the difference, they are called as the Shrutis. Okay. So, like that. So, both kinds of statements are there. In the conclusions of those ignorant of the truth, only a portion of the Vedas are accepted. So, only the Abheda Shrutis are accepted by the Mayavadis. Okay. There is no difference. So, whenever the scriptures talk about actual difference, they say, oh, here Vyasadeva is bewildered here. He is under illusion. He is speaking like this. They mention like that. So therefore, you cannot. So, those who are ignorant of the truth accept only a portion of the Vedas. Like that. So, they will reject a fifth. If Vyasadeva is under illusion, you see the point here. If they say that Vyasadeva is under illusion, then on what basis they accept a part of his teachings? Okay. So, which means, for you, Vyasadeva is not the authority. Your own intelligence is the authority, because they are able to tell where Vyasadeva is under illusion and where he is not under illusion. Which means, already whatever Vyasadeva has written, you know all of that. So, Vyasadeva is not the authority for the Mayavadis. This is reality actually. So, they're telling that Vyasadeva is our reality, Vyasadeva is our authority, we are quoting from scriptures, that is all bogus. Because if Vyasadeva was their authority, then they would not be talking in terms of here Vyasadeva is illusioned. So you know where is Vyasadeva illusion, where he is not illusion, which means their intelligence is superior to Vyasadeva's intelligence, which means they are their own authority and Vyasadeva is not their authority. Okay. So therefore, such people are ignorant of the truth because they accept only a portion of the Vedas and they reject the other part of the Vedas. So he says, in the conclusions of the knowers of the truth, the purport of all the Vedas is accepted. So, therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings to Prakashananda Saraswati, he talks about the principles of hermeneutics. So the first thing that he says is, the Vedas are Ishvara Vachana. They are direct words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if they are Ishvara Vachana, then there is no scope for illusion there. Every statement has to be accepted. Okay. So, and then he gives other hermeneutical principles. Hermeneutics means how do you understand the Vedic statements, the statements of the scriptures. The second principle that he says is, these statements should primarily be accepted in their mukhya lakshana, the direct meaning. You should not try to give indirect allegorical meanings to all the statements. Okay, this is what the Mayavadis do. If they cannot support their philosophy, if they take the direct meaning of those statements, so they say that, oh, direct meaning should not be taken, only indirect meaning should be taken. Because for taking the direct meaning, Pratyaksha Praman is sufficient. You don't need Shabda to tell which is directly perceivable. The very fact that you need Shabda means that which is not directly evident, in order to reveal that you need Shabda. So this is their perverted understanding. And this is the argument that they give. Why do you need Shabda for that which is self-evident? So you don't need Shabda for that which is self-evident. So therefore, you cannot take the direct meaning of the Shabda. You have to take the indirect meaning. That's how they explain. But this is all bogus. And very clearly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to Prakashananda Saraswati that you have to take the direct meaning and not the indirect meaning. Those who have a thirst for worshipping the Lord learn from the teachings of Amnaya that Lord Krishna is all-pervading and one without a second. Shri Krishna is the absolute truth. Okay, now he is summarizing the Sambandha Tattvas. So the Sambandha Tattvas is... prior to that. Those who have thirst for worshipping the Lord learn from the teachings of the Amnaya. This is the first thing. Vedas are the Pramanas. That Lord Krishna is all pervading, one without a second. He is the absolute truth. This is the second principle. He possesses all energies. This is the second thing. He is Sarva Shaktiman. Although the living entities and the material world are manifested by his energies, he still remains without a second. There is Ekam Brahma Dvitiya Nasti. The Shastras do say this. There is one Lord, there is nothing other than the Lord. So, what do the Mayavadis say? They say that there is only Lord, there is no second item, right? So therefore, you see Jiva, Jiva is illusion. You see this world, world is illusion. Because the Shastras very clearly say, Ekam Brahma Dvitiya Nasti, there is only Brahman, there is no second. Therefore, any second thing that you see is illusion. This is their understanding. But the Vaishnavas, they don't reject the Vedic aphorism, Ekam Brahma Dvitiya Nasti or Neha Nanasti Kinchana. These kind of statements, But the right understanding of these statements is that that Brahman whom you are talking about, he has energies. The jivas whom you are seeing are the marginal energy of Brahman. The material world that you see is the external energy of Brahman. So, ekam brahma dvitiya nasti means there is only one Lord and there is nothing other than the Lord, and that Lord possesses the jivatmas as his marginal potency and the material world as his external potency, and he has many other potencies. Possessing all these potencies, only the Supreme Lord exists. There is no other thing that exists. So, ekam brahma dvitiya nasti essentially means that to see, so therefore, the Mayavadi say, what you are seeing, which is other than the Supreme Lord, it's all illusion. Jiva, illusion. Material world, illusion. Why? Because the Shastras say, other than the Absolute Truth, nothing else exists. But the Vaishnavas say, well, other than the Supreme Lord, nothing else exists is true. But the Supreme Lord possesses energies. So the Jiva is the energy of the Lord. Material world is also the energy of the Lord. So practically, illusion is not, the living entity is not illusory. The material world is not illusory. But to see the living entity and the material world exist independent of the Supreme Lord, that independent existence, to not see anything as an energy of the Supreme Lord or being connect to Supreme Lord, to see that connection, that is mine. Vrite artham yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyad atmano mayam yata baso yata tamah. So, Srila Prabhupada, in line with Srila Jiva Goswami, explains that to see some things, anything as not being connected to Krishna, or seeing the existence of an object independent of the of its connection with Krishna, that is illusion. So, because that would challenge Devism, ekam brahma dvitiya nasti. Okay, so ekam brahma dvitiya nasti. So only Brahman exists, nothing else exists. So therefore, but you do see the water bottle. I am seeing the laptop right in front of me. I am seeing other living entities roaming around. So the Mayavadis say, oh, all of that is illusion. Why? Because ekam brahma dvitiya nasti. There is only Brahman, there is nothing else. Vaishnavas say, no, that is not the understanding. I see laptop, Bahiranga Shakti. I see bottle, Bahiranga Shakti. I see other jivas, Tatastha Shakti. Everything is an energy of Krishna or is connected with Krishna. So, the energetic along with his energy, other than that, there is no second object in this world. Ekam Brahma, Dvitiya Nasti. So neither are the Vaishnavas rejecting that statement, nor are the impersonalists rejecting that statement, have a very twisted understanding of that statement, and the Vaishnavas have the proper understanding. So there is a funny story. I think I probably shared this before. I don't know it was in which forum. Therefore they are called as Mayavadis, because they call things Maya, Maya, Maya. So there was a Mayavadi guru who was teaching his students about Mayavad, that everything is illusion, 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 like that. So one day they were walking in forest and suddenly they heard the roar of a tiger. So when they heard the roar of a tiger, students had just heard about the Mayavad philosophy. So they were afraid from inside, but they didn't want to embarrass themselves in front of their guru, because guru has very clearly told that whatever you see in this material world is Maya. So after hearing such philosophy, if they show their fear, then it would be such an insult to the truth. So somehow they tolerated that fear, but they turned towards that teacher. When they turned towards the teacher had already run 100 meters out of fear of the tiger. Then they looked at each other and they said, "My goodness, I also ran in different directions." And after some time, they met the teacher. The students asked, "Gurudev, what is this? You taught us that, you know, it's illusion. But then as soon as you heard the roar of a tiger, you ran away. Why can't you practice what you're preaching?" The guru said, "What do you mean? I have perfectly practiced what I am preaching." So they asked, "How is that?" And he said, "Look, you heard the roar of the tiger?" They said, "Yes." He said, "That is an illusion. And you saw me running? That is also an illusion." So in this way, everything is illusion. This is perfect affliction of the Mayavad philosophy. Like that. Of course, this is just a joke. So the point is that they are trying to reconcile the state of not reality in the scriptures is a perverted way of doing it, because in trying to resolve those abheda shrutis or statements which establish the non-duality, if you resort to that, then there are so many other statements in the scriptures which actually talk about the difference between the spirit soul and the absolute truth. These are the Veda Shrutis. Okay. And there are many scriptural statements which actually talk about the qualities of the absolute truth. The scriptures talk about the absolute truth to be Kalyana Sagara, an ocean of auspicious qualities. So how do you reconcile this? So what Mayavadis say? They say that, oh, when Vyasadeva wrote this statement, he was under illusion. So they selectively reject those statements which very explicitly speak about the difference between the Jiva and the absolute truth. But wherever he talks about the similarity, qualitative oneness between the Jiva and the absolute truth, they say that, oh, this is right. So now, this is not a holistic understanding. So if Vyasadeva is half illusion, then how do you know which of half is illusion? If you can clearly understand which of that half is illusion, then which means you trust your intelligence more than Vyasadeva. Which means Vyasadeva is not your authority. Your intelligence is your authority. So in this way, actually these people are atheistic. Atheistic because superficially they seem to trust the Vedic scriptures, but in reality they don't. They don't. Because the one who is the compiler of the Vedic scriptures, according to them, is under illusion. Right? So, therefore, here he says, the absolute truth possesses all energies. Although the living entities in the material world are manifested by his energies, still he remains without a second. How he remains without a second? Because the living entities are his tatastha shakti, the material world is his bahiranga shakti. So, possessing his tatastha shakti and bahiranga shakti and many other things, ekam brahma dvitiya nasti, there is one absolute truth and there is no second. So he says the Indians are constitutionally non-different from Krishna. Material creation, everything other than Krishna is a transformation of his energy and therefore eternally separate from him. So separated energy. Binna prakriti. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kammano buddhirevacha ahankaraitiyam me binna prakriti rashtada. These are the separated energy of Krishna. Okay. This eternal oneness and difference is naturally inconceivable because it is beyond the range of the living entity's material intelligence. Living entity's material intelligence cannot process this simultaneous, inconceivable oneness and difference between the supreme lawless energies. When the living entity's spiritual intelligence is awakened, pure knowledge of the inconceivable oneness and difference is aroused. Keeping firm faith in the statements of Amnaya, by the mercy of Krishna, the devotees can clearly see the truth of the inconceivable oneness and difference. So unless one receives the mercy of Krishna and the devotees, seeing this truth, achinta bheda bheda, is very difficult. If we use material consideration to understand this, it becomes theoretical. So then you somehow stretch it, twist it, change it, adjust it to make it conceivable. Make it somehow conceivable using material logic. But in reality, it is actually inconceivable. So only one who comes to the conclusion that it is inconceivable is intelligent. But one who tries to artificially make it conceivable is unintelligent. So oversimplification of complex reality is actually a sign of poor intelligence. The person is not even able to realize that it is much more sophisticated than what he thinks. So he is trying to oversimplify an actually sophisticated subject matter. This is a sign of poor intelligence. So when one achieves knowledge of the seven realities through self-realization by the strength of Amnaya, then it may be said that one has sambandha jnana, knowledge of one's relationship with the Lord. So here is material consciousness. Okay. And here is spiritual consciousness. Okay. So all seven realities can be realized at this stage only. Okay. With material consciousness, they cannot be realized. So how do you go from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness? The Vedas. The Vedas help bridge this. When we take the help of Vedas and try to come to this level, then at the level of spiritual consciousness, one can realize seven realities. In reply to Srila Sanatana Goswami's question, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has elaborately spoken on the science of one's relationship with the Lord. As given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Sanatana Goswami asks, Kaya mi kene ama jarata patrai, iha na hi jani kemane hitahai. Who am I? Why do the threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Those persons who want the greatest benefit in the form of achieving devotion to Krishna should ask all these questions to the spiritual master. Who am I? Kene amai jare tapatrai? Why do the threefold miseries trouble me? इहा नाही जानी के माने हता है. इफ आई डू नॉट नो द आंसर टू दिस क्वेश्चन हाउ कैन आई एक्चुअली बी बेनिफिटेड. By hearing the proper answers to these questions from the mouth of one's guru, all of one's doubts will be cleared and firm faith will awaken. So, essentially, one should hear from the mouth of the guru about these seven subject matters. Then all of one's doubts will be cleared. When these doubts are cleared, then one can perform devotional service with determination, with confidence. Do not give up deliberation as useless. Deliberation is trying to understand the Siddhanta properly. One should not say, ultimately, I have to become lover of Krishna. So, what is the need of all this philosophy and all that? I don't need to understand the philosophy. So, he says that in Chaitanya Charita it is mentioned, Siddhanta Bali Achitte Nakara Alas Iha Haite Krishna Gesu Drudha Manas. A sincere student should not let the discussion of such conclusions, considering them controversial. For such discussions strengthen the mind. Thus one's mind becomes attached to Krishna. True attachment to Krishna can happen only with proper sambandha jnana. Otherwise, it will be a sentimental attachment to Krishna, which cannot be sustained long run. So therefore, the seven sambandha jnana that we have discussed, right? So one should hear about these seven things from the mouth of the guru. Now see, among 10 realities, the first eight are related with the authority and one's relationship with the Lord. So the first principle was about the authority. What is the authority? Pramana, Vedic literatures are the Pramana. And the next seven, 2-8. Okay, these next seven was about Sambandha Jnana. Okay, of which first three were about the absolute truth. Three were about the jivas and one was about achintya bheda abheda tattva. Okay, like that. So we have seen 8 out of 10. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to give proofs for these 8 tatvas. On what basis one has reached these conclusions. But before we start that, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, I'll pause to see. Anything anyone would like to share as add, please go ahead. Mother Gail.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Okay, I'm trying to refer you back to the slide just before the last one. Yeah, right before mm-hmm. this one. Okay. Now here, I think this is the one. Oh my God. I think it may be maybe one more back.
Okay.
Yes, this is it. Mm-hmm. Say, so in the second paragraph, it says, when one achieves knowledge of these seven realities through self-realization by the strength of Amnaya Vedas.
Amnaya means the Vedas.
Oh, okay. That's the word. I wanted that word. Okay, yeah. Then it may be said that one has some Sambandha again.
Knowledge of one's relationship okay. with the Lord.
Okay, so I'm giving you warning. I'm going to be exhibiting my lack of intelligence according to your class because I'm not really so clear on why our oneness and difference or Krishna's oneness and difference with his energies is so inconceivable. And the reason why I'm not able to see that so clearly is because, you know, we have nice analogies that seem to work. Like, let's say a person is the body has so many parts, right? Arms, legs, heart, lungs. Yeah. And so through that analogy, we can easily understand how a person is one and different from their parts, you know? Mm-hmm. So when we think of Krishna being one and different mm-hmm. from his parts, why is it more inconceivable than that?
Okay. We'll take one example to understand this. So in Bhagavad Gita, we will take one from Bhagavad Gita to understand how analogies do help us understand, but they don't necessarily very clearly indicate the inconceivable step. Okay, so this comes in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is yatakasha stito nityam vayur sarvatra go mahan tata sarvani tani matstani iti upadharay. So he is requesting Krishna, Arjuna, oh Arjuna, please upadhare, please understand. Let me try to explain to you this subject matter. Yata akasha stito nityam vayur satrago mahan tata sarvani bhutani matstani iti upadhare. So he says, you see this sky? Krishna, Arjuna says, yes. This sky limits the sky limits the space that is available for the wind to flow. The sky is capable of limiting the space available for the wind to flow. But within space, the wind has its free will to move wherever it wants. So, though ether or space is capable of restricting the wind, it restricts to a particular level but allows the wind to flow around within that. Tatha, in the same way, sarvani bhutani, all living entities are controlled by me. Just like the, he says that ether has control over the wind, but no attachment. Ether is not attached to the wind. Even though ether has the ability to control the space of the wind, ether exerts control, is detached. Tata, in the same way, I exert control over the jivas, but I am detached. So this analogy explains Krishna's control and detachment, right? Isn't it?
Well, when it comes to Krishna, exerting control, uh-huh. yet is detached. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, are the jivas like, in this analogy, it's not that the jivas are free to do whatever they want.
Yeah, but there is some element of freedom that is there.
Yeah, uh-huh, okay, huh? Okay.
So the point that Krishna is telling is, look, how do I deal with the jivas? He says, even though I have the ability to control them, but I still remain rich by giving them a scope for expressing their free will. Even though I can control everything, I remain detached to them, scope for free will. So how do you explain this? He says, oh, just like the ether or the space limits the space available for the wind to move. So the space has an element of control over the wind with respect to the space available for wind to move, but still the ether is detached. In the same way, I exert control, but at the same time I'm detached. In that way, this is an explanation. So this analogy seemingly making what is probably inconceivable conceivable, right? But in reality, it is inconceivable because ether is inanimate. Wind is inanimate. Inanimate ether, even though can exert, is not consciously exerting any control over the wind. And inanimate ether has no detachment because, but this coexistence of these two qualities of exerting control, absolute control, absolute detachment is not seen in any living entities. It's seen in any animate object, in any animate living entity, except for Krishna. So when you give, if you have, so therefore you have to use the example of an inanimate object to explain the level of detachment of Krishna, because no animate object seems to exhibit that level of detachment, especially while exerting that level of control that Krishna exerts.
Oh, wait, okay. You're kind of losing me.
So the point that I'm trying to explain is that you have to understand the scope of the analogy. Analogies do not completely explain spiritual reality. So they can explain a part of it, like this analogy of ether exerting control but at the same time detached explains the control that the Supreme Lord exerts over living entities at the same time being absolutely detached. So the coexistence of absolute control and absolute detachment cannot coexist in living entities. It can coexist only in matter.
You said, can you repeat that last sentence?
The coexistence of absolute detachment and absolute control over anything cannot coexist in living.
Oh my God, the sound was breaking up, so I couldn't.
Okay, I'll repeat, Mataji. Can you hear? Is it a little bit better?
I mean, for now, you know.
Okay, I was telling that the coexistence of absolute detachment, absolute control over something is not possible in living entities.
Absolute detachment and absolute control.
They cannot coexist
for any living entity?
In any living entity. No living entity can say, I have total control, but I am completely detached. I control everything, but I am detached. So that level of absolute control and absolute detachment coexist in a living entity. It can coexist only in inanimate matter, like in the case of ether, which is completely detached. It is completely detached or seemingly detached.
Yes.
Because it is detached. Yes. It is detached not because it possesses the virtue of detachment. It is detached because it is inanimate.
Yes. Yes.
And it has absolute control because of its constitutional nature of being.
Yes.
You know, and not because it has the virtue of controllership.
Yes.
So So therefore, here is definitely an analogy which is seemingly making us qualities conceivable, but if you go deep into it, it does not make it conceivable, because only the example of dull matter is used to explain a totally sentient being. Not only is he sentient, but he is omniscient also. He is completely sentient of this whole material universe. He is the topmost sentient being. But this kind of coexistence of absolute detachment and absolute control is not seen in any other living entity. So therefore, it is still inconceivable.
Yes.
So like that, if you see many analogies which seemingly explain, seem to explain to make the inconceivable conceivable, actually is not making it conceivable, actually.
Yes, you but, see, I came into this discussion understanding that analogies do have limitations. I get that. But my point is that I don't see why or how the analogies are incomplete or limited in the case where we're trying to say that Krishna is inconceivably one and different from his energies. In other words, I'm not able to see the limitations of the analogy that we've heard when it comes to this particular issue only. For other issues, yes, is apparent, like the one you just gave, And there are another analogies that it's obvious the limitations of the analogies. But for this particular case about the inconceivable oneness and difference of Krishna's energies, that is where I don't know where the limitations of the analogy is. Like, let's say the human being and its parts. Why is that? How is that analogy too limited to explain this inconceivable aspect of Krishna?
Well, it's not necessary that there is oneness and difference between Krishna's energies and Krishna, but not everything is inconceivable actually in that. So
that is certainly what part is inconceivable? What part is inconceivable?
Well, one example I did give, like that there are many examples where there is, for example, in the Supreme Lord, the coexistence of contradictory qualities, which are contradictory for the living entity, but they are not contradictory to the Supreme Lord. They can coexist in the Supreme Lord. That is inconceivable. I'll give you an example.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, no, I understand. Like, he is the greatest and he's the smallest. Same time. Yeah. That's inconceivable. But how is it inconceivable that he is, one, the same as his parts, yet different from his parts?
Oh, okay.
Like, I understand that, I have my arm, that's a part of me, but it's also me. That's conceivable to me. So why is it inconceivable when it comes to Krishna and his parts?
Okay, one thing is that, I will give you one aspect. There could be multiple aspects of it which I'm not able to think about it. Can your hand function independent of you?
No.
But does your hand possess a free will?
No.
But some of Krishna's energies do possess.
But they can't act independently of him.
Yeah, I mean, they can think independently of Krishna. They can choose to rebel against Krishna.
but not without his empowerment. They're totally
That's
dependent
okay.
even for thinking.
But Krishna still, but they can still think independent of Krishna. But none of our bodily parts can think independent of in one sense, to even think that someone can possess an energy which is animate. Isn't it inconceivable? Have you ever seen someone possessing an energy which is animate? I mean, isn't this sufficiently conceivable actually in one sense? Your ability to lift something up, you know, it can think on its own, act its own. And even the case of separated parts and parcels. Do you have separate parts and parcels, you know, limbs which function but are eternally separated from you in one sense? They are your limbs but eternally separated from you. I mean, these are some things which we have heard again and again, and we have seemingly internalized it. But what we actually done is to understand that, yes, I will not understand, I will just accept it. There are many such aspects actually, which we have heard from our from the cradle of our spiritual life. And we have sort of assumed and accepted it, but yes, without actually thinking about it.
Seeing how it's because possible, right?
Yeah, in reality, it's not possible. We have no experience of seeing anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, lot of the inconceivable aspect, we have accepted them as, you can say, axioms.
Yes, yes.
So, axiomatic acceptance of many, many subject matters, because we had not learned to question at that stage actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, lot of it has gone into us in the form of axioms, which
yes,
we are not willing to pull them out and question now. But when mm-hmm. someone pulls it for us, we don't have an explanation for it. We don't have an mm-hmm. experience that that will support it actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
So like that, there are many things actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I feel a little better. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Okay, anything else before we move ahead? Okay, if there is none, we will continue our discussion. Next, we come to the proofs of these 8 tattvas. Okay, so he says, one will receive all information from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's answer to Sanatana Goswami. So, all of these will be discussed from Sanatana Siksha. So, yeah, like that. Okay, so here it is mentioned, regarding authority, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement is given in Chaitanya Charitam. Okay, so this is the first thing, that the Vedas are the Praman. Okay, this is the proof for that. So this is the proof for the first principle. Veda Shastra ka he sambandha abhideya prayojan, Krishna prapya sambandha bhakti praptyera sadhan. The Vedic literatures give information about the living entity's eternal relationship with Krishna, which is called a sambandha. The living entity's understanding of the relationship and is acting accordingly is called as abhideya. And returning back to Godhead is the ultimate goal of life, and it's called as prayojana. So next, so this is one proof. Second proof is the second, how Lord Hari is the absolute truth. Okay. Krishnera Swarupa Vicharshuna Sanatan Advayajnana Tavraje Vrajendra Nandan. O Sanatan, please hear about the eternal form of Lord Krishna. He is the absolute truth, devoid of duality, Vasant in Vrindavan as the son of Nanda Maharaj. So Lord Hari is the absolute truth. Vrajendra Nandan, you know, he is the absolute truth, right? So this is the proof. So he is basically giving the proofs for all these Dashamoola Tattva from Sanatana Siksha only, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna Govinda Paranam Sarvaishwarya Purna Yarago Lokanitam. The original Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. His original name is Govinda. He is full of potencies and his eternal abode is known as Vrindavan. This is the third principle. Okay. He is full of all opulences. Sarva Shaktiman. Sarvaishwarya Purna. Okay. So this is the third principle. He is Sarva Shaktiman. Then he says, Jnana Yoga Bhakti Tena Sadhane Ravashe Brahma Atma Bhagavan Trivida Prakashe. There are three kinds of ritual processes for understanding the absolute truth. This is Jnana, Yoga and Bhakti. According to these three processes, the absolute truth manifested as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, you know. Okay. Then, regarding his energies, okay. So, this is actually the second principle only. Then now, he is Sarva Shaktiman. So, now this is the third principle. He is Sarva Shaktiman. So, then here in the previous thing, he says that the same absolute truth is perceived as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. That is mentioned here. So, this is still about Lord Hari only. So, regarding Krishna's energies, he is Sarva Shaktiman. He is a possessor of all opulences. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Leela, Krishnera Swabhavika Tinati Parinati Chitshakti Jeeva Shakti Aramaya Shakti. Krishner Swabhavika Tina Shakti Parinati. Lord Krishna naturally has three energetic transformations and these are known as spiritual potency, the living entity potency and the illusory potency. Chitshakti, Jeeva Shakti and Maya Shakti. So he is Sarva Shaktiman and his energies can be primarily divided into three. Then the fourth principle, that Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He is the personification of all spiritual mellows. So Krishna is full of rasa, as explained in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sarva Adi Sarva Amshi Kishora Shekhar Siddhananda Deha Sarva Shraya Sarveshwara. Krishna is the original source of everything and the sum total of everything. He appears as a supreme youth and his whole being is composed of spiritual bliss. Chidananda Deha. Sarvashraya Sarveshwara. He is the shelter of everything and he is the master of everyone. Okay. And then, now we enter into the fifth principle, which is the Jiva as the Tatastha Shakti. Okay. The instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu regarding the constitutional position of the living entity is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jivera Swarupahai Krishnera Nityadas Krishnera Tatastha Shakti Beda Beda Prakash Suryam Shakirana Agni Jwala Chai Swabhavika Krishnera Tina Prakara Shakti Hai. So again, in Sanatana Siksha, he says, it is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna. Jivera Swarubhai Krishnera Nityadas. Because he is the marginal potency of Krishna, Krishnera Tata Shakti, and a manifestation of simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, Beda Beda Prakash. Suryamsha Kirana Yaiche Agni Jwala Chai, like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire. Krishna has three varieties of energies. So here he is talking about the living entity being the Tatastha Shakti of the Lord or the marginal potency of the Lord. So this is the fifth principle. Then the sixth principle about the conditioned living entities, Nitya Baddha Jivas. Okay. Regarding the conditioned living entities, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the following description in the Charitamrita. Tei vibhinnamsha jiva duita prakar eka nitya mukta eka nitya samsar krishna boli sei jiva anadi bahirmukh atayeva maya tare deya samsara dukh. Sei vibhinnamsha jiva duita prakar, the vibhinnamsha jivas, the separated parts and parcels of the supreme lord are of two types. Eka nitya mukta, one is nitya mukta. Eka nitya samsar, one is nitya baddha. Nitya baddha is Krishna boli sei jiv anadi bahir mukh. Krishna boli sei jiv, when the living entity forgets about Krishna, he is anadi bahirmukha. He is attracted to the maya or the mayic world or the illusory material world eternally. Ata eva maya tare deya samsara duk. Therefore, the illusory energy gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence. Of course, material energy gives misery. Material energy does not give misery in one sense, because the desire of the living entity to enjoy separately in itself is miserable, because it is not possible for the living entity to enjoy separately from Krishna. So, material energy in one sense does not give misery, but the choice of the living entity to enjoy matter in itself is a recipe for misery, actually. That's all. So it is not that the jiva does not suffer because of maya. Maya does not give suffering to jivas. The suffering of the jiva is because of his choice to enjoy separately from Krishna, which is not possible, actually. That itself, if maya does not facilitate that enjoyment, he will suffer all the more. So it is not true the jiva is suffering because of maya. The jiva is suffering because he has turned his face away from Krishna. And maya, by giving him some anesthesia, is trying to allow the jiva to be under the illusion and still try to enjoy separately from Krishna. Otherwise, if maya was not there trying to facilitate him, then the naked reality, when Krishna, the living entity, comes in touch with naked reality, the living entity will experience unbelievable suffering, actually. So therefore, the actually maya can see by giving him a gross body and body actually alleviates that misery. In Bhagavatam, there is an episode in the third canto when Kapila Dev is teaching his mother Devahuti, and he explains that this is one of the reasons, this is the reason why after, during the final dissolution or pralaya, when the living entities are forcibly the gross body and subtle body is removed from the living entity, the living entity is immediately put into a state of deep sleep. Why? because such a state is very painful. So it is mentioned that sometimes some of those jivas may wake up from that sleep. And suddenly they realize that they don't have their gross and subtle body. They think, I am dead, ahead. Nashte ahankarane atmanam nashtavatcha manyamanaha. It is mentioned like that. So, I am dead, I am dead. Actually, then they realize, oh, if I am dead, evam pravamarsya. After careful consideration, they think, oh, actually, I am not dead. It's just that I don't have my body. Oh, actually, I am not this body, I am the soul. So which means the jiva gets self-realization. I am not this body, I am the soul. And the state of the jiva is mentioned by Kapila Dev. He says, Nashta Vitta Iva Atura. The jiva becomes extremely dressed, like a person who has gained great wealth loses that wealth. When he loses that wealth, it gives him great pain, actually. So, and that pain is so intolerable that the Supreme Lord has to put those conditioned souls into sleep. So actually, Maya, the conditioned soul is not suffering due to Maya. The conditioned soul is suffering because he wants to try to enjoy separately from Krishna, which is not possible constitutionally. But actually, Maya potency alleviates that suffering by giving him the anesthesia in the form of gross body and subtle body. Otherwise, so therefore, to think that otherwise, you know, when the gross body and subtle body, which is given by the Maya potency, is forcibly taken away from the jiva essentially has to be put to deep sleep, because that situation of forcible self-realization, forceful self-realization, is very painful for the conditioned soul who is not yet ready for liberation. As much as self-realization gives bliss to a living entity who is qualified for liberation, to that same extent, forceful self-realization gives tremendous pain to the living entity who is not qualified for liberation. Like that. So this is about the Nitya Baddhas. And the seventh principle about the Nitya Muktas. He says, Nitya Mukta Nitya Krishna Charani Unmukha Krishna Parishada Nama Bunje Seva Sukha. Nitya Mukta Nitya Krishna Charani Unmukha. The Nitya Mukta Jiva is eternally looking towards the, is favorable to the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna Parishada Nama, they are called Krishna Parishadas. Bunje Seva Sukha, and they experience the bliss of serving the lotus feet of Krishna. Then, regarding the eighth principle of Achintya Bheda Bheda, it is described, Krishnera Tatastha Shakti Bheda Bheda Prakash. We have already seen this. The living entity is the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation simultaneously and different from the Lord. Like that. Okay. In this way, he gives the proofs for all the eight principles that we have discussed now. So before we move on to the ninth principle, I will pause to see if there are any quick discussion points, questions, comments, anything anyone would like to share as had. Okay, Mother Gail.
Yes, just to repeat, the living entities who are not ready
mm-hmm.
for liberation,
mm-hmm.
for them, if you take away their gross and subtle body,
mm-hmm.
it would be very painful for them because
yeah.
why? Because they will be left feeling like they don't have like an identity or an existence. Why is it so painful?
Exactly. It is so painful because their desire to enjoy separately from Krishna is not gone. And they don't have a facility to enjoy separately from Krishna in the form of gross body and subtle body.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if liberation would give joy to conditioned souls, then ghosts should be much more happier than the embodied mm-hmm. persons, isn't it?
Yes.
At least they are half
yes.
liberated. At least they don't have the gross body. So
mm-hmm.
if absence of gross body should give pleasure, at least should give half pleasure, at least should give some mm-hmm. kind of pleasure. But the ghosts are said to be much more miserable than the embodied living entities, those who do have a gross body also. So, and Bhagavatam describes the pain of a conditioned soul when he is forcefully pushed into the state of self-realization at the time of dissolution. When the gross body is taken away, subtle body is taken away, but the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna is not gone, and he has no facility to enjoy separately from Krishna now.
Yes, so therefore the real pain is caused by the lack of facility for what you want to do.
The lack of what, Madhuri?
Facility.
Yeah, yeah. So that facility
that's
is provided by Brahma, actually.
You said the voice drop is prepared by Maya, you said?
That facility is provided by Maya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and the reality though is even though you know we're given that facility because we want to enjoy separately, I think you're making the point too that our real suffering is caused by our trying to basically be something that we're not, right?
It's
not that Maya is imposing suffering on us. We are like
yeah.
causing our own suffering by not wanting to be who we are. Is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just one last point on this. You said that...
And what exactly Maya is trying to do is it is not letting us face the naked reality because it is too painful for the living entity. So Maya Devi is just allowing us to alleviate that pain by allowing us to try for some more time and learn in a much more gentler way that it is not possible to enjoy separately from Krishna. Otherwise, if Maya would not have done, it would have been a very painful thing for the Jiva. Maya is giving a much lesser painful lesson for the Jiva to learn and turn towards Krishna in a very gentleman way. Otherwise, it would be a very, very crude way of self-realization. And of course, the Jiva may forcefully turn towards Krishna, but it will not necessarily generate love for the Lord, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so the naked reality that would be too painful for us is to have to exist without that loving service to Krishna.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I mean, basically that's it. Just to just having to be aware of our existence, but without being able to love Krishna. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that by itself, you're saying is just too painful, because that's our constitutional position. And so to not be able to fulfill that constitutional position, you're saying, would be too painful. And so therefore, I'm just trying to clarify for myself what you're saying.
Now, what I meant is, we have somehow, for whatever reason, for whatever inconceivable reason, we have decided that I want to enjoy separately from Krishna. The naked reality is, no, you can't just shut up and turn towards Krishna. That is naked reality.
Mm-hmm.
And which, because for whatever reasons we have developed that envy towards Krishna, it is totally not digestible to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, Maya says, oh, no, it's possible. Please come. I will facilitate it too. Even though it's not possible. So it's sort of Maya Devi sort of bandages that wound and, makes us feel that you're all right. You're all right.
So, yeah, breaks our fall, kind of. She breaks our fall.
I'm sorry?
She breaks the fall, Breaks the fall means like if a person is falling, you interrupt the fall so they don't fall as hard.
As hard. Exactly. That's exactly what she tries to do. So in one sense, so that in a very gentle way, the living entity learns, no, this is not a place for you to stay. If only you could turn your face towards Krishna. He's a loving father. And he loves you. He is very benevolent. Go and serve him. Your auspicious life will begin from there. So in a very gentle way, Maya actually helps us realize it actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, there are some things in the chat box. How Kripasiddha devotees will be managed? How will they be managed? I'm not understand the question. Let me see. But if avidya is removed, our Krishna prem, which is inside, should come out right then and they should feel happy. For Krishna, nothing is impossible. So by Kripa Siddhi, he can remove that avidya aspect from that person. Even though this is not a norm, Krishna does not do it for everyone. This is certainly not a norm, but it is not impossible for Krishna to do it. So, yeah. But a child in the womb cries, he will worship Lord, and when they come outside, they fall in Maya. I used to think that all living entities want to get out, but Maya is not letting us to go out. Is there any description of Maya in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? I believe it is not, right? Well, there are a lot of questions. Okay, first thing, not all children in the womb worship the Lord. This is very clearly clarified by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to that third canto, I guess it is 31st chapter, where the jiva within the womb offers prayers to the Lord. So it is mentioned very clearly by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, is that this is only one specific jiva who was a very exalted devotee who offered this prayer. Not all living entities offer this prayer. Okay. Yeah. And when they come outside, they fall in Maya. Well, outside there is a facility, but that the desire to unite with Krishna is not, it has not consummated actually. It has not reached the a full-fledged situation. So therefore, they, in one sense, when they come out, Maya affects them. Maya is always there, but it does not affect a person who has reached the stage of Krishna Prema. But because the living entity has not reached the stage of Krishna Prema, so Maya affects that person. So, but without Krishna Prema, which means without removing that end from Krishna completely, if Maya lets one go to the spiritual world, then that spiritual world will be a place of suffering for that person. So therefore, Maya retains him in this material world, keeps enticing him. And as long as he is getting enticed, that is the litmus test that he is not ready to go there. Maya is not enticing that person to keep him. Maya is enticing that person to not allow him to prematurely go there and suffer, actually. So spiritual world is not, in one sense, inherently blissful for all living entities. Spiritual world is blissful for those living entities who have developed the initial qualifications. Like we say, Vaikuntha means Vigata Kunta. That's where there is no anxieties. Okay. It is not a place where there is no anxieties. It's not inherently a place without anxieties. Okay. That anyone who has a lot of anxieties, when he goes to Vaikuntha, he will not have any anxiety. It's not like that. It's just that people who have given up all material anxieties and have started loving Krishna, only they are allowed entrance there. It's just like telling that IIT, Indian Institute of Technology, is the place of most intelligent people. It's a place of concentrated intelligence. So one should not think that, oh, if I go there, I will also become very, very intelligent. No, that's not the case. It's such a place because only intelligent people are allowed entrance there. It's not that anyone who goes there becomes intelligent because of the ins of that place. It's just that only such people are given entrance there. If Vaikuntha was inherently blissful, then when Durvasa Muni, after having offended Ambarish Maharaj, when he was somehow allowed entrance into Vaikuntha, he must have immediately given up his anxiety. But Vaikuntha, historically documented in Srimad Bhagavatam, that Durvasa Muni had maximum anxiety in Vaikuntha actually. Because even the Supreme Lord said, I am helpless. You go and fall at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj and beg forgiveness. So, if the place itself was inherently, you can say, free of anxieties, then as Durvasa Muni with great anxiety should enter into, as soon as he enters into Vaikuntha, he must have become anxiety free. Right? So, Maya does not want to let us go is true. But in reality, she does not want to let us go prematurely to the spiritual world and suffer there. She wants us to become properly qualified so that we can derive the actual bliss that place can potentially give. The place is filled with sweet nectar. Maya Devi is not allowing us to go there because we are jaundiced. All that nectar would taste bitter for us. Therefore, she is keeping us here so that we take sufficient time to cure our jaundice, so that when we go there, we relish the bliss of the spiritual world. And the bliss of the spiritual world is in serving Krishna. As long as we retain that envy towards Krishna, when we go there, how will we experience the bliss of service? Because we don't have that service attitude. So therefore, we have to be eternally grateful to the agency of Maya. Maya does not like doing this. Maya wants to let go of any sincere doctor wants to let go of patients. Any sincere doctor wants to see his patients go out of the hospital healthy. But no doctor wants to let go of his patient out of the hospital while still sick. So that is the role of Maya. So we have everything to feel grateful to Maya. And if we actually practice bhakti, Maya will be very pleased because she is a devotee of Krishna. But she's a devotee of Krishna, but she is also an examiner. Just like a teacher conducts examination. Okay. He will not let you go to the higher grade if he feels that you will go and suffer there. If you have not gained essential knowledge and wisdom to go to the higher grade, the teacher would rather want you to stay back in the lower grade and become qualified. That is the role of Maya. But Maya will be very happy with you if we actually become very qualified to go there. She will very happily send us back while herself choosing to stay back in the material world to encourage more and more living entities to go back to the spiritual world. So this is very thankless job what she's doing. So Krishna is very pleased with her. So Mayadevi, yes, she does work very hard so that we don't escape the hospital without getting completely cured. That is her purpose. Otherwise, Krishna is not a sadistic person that he will put Maya to give us trouble. Not that kind of trouble. Okay, any final comments before we wind up for the day? It's already 9 o'clock now. Any final comments, questions before we wind up? Is there any description of Maya in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Well, I'll have to think about it. May not be in a very explicit sense. Only a lot of it is implied. I will think about it and let you know. Yes, Mother Gail, last question.
Yeah, this is just a comment, Prabhu. I just have to say how much in love I am with this description, this very compassionate description that you've given of Maya Devi, and therefore at the corollary of Krishna himself too. You know, I've never heard her described in this very compassionate way, and I appreciate it so immensely. You know, it's just like a game changer, you know, in terms of how it makes you see your trials, you know, in this conditional life, you know. It gives a totally different cast of color on everything. So, you know, you always hear that, you know, Maya challenges us to test us to make sure that, for example, that we're not going to go and disturb Krishna prematurely, you know, or things like that, you know. She's presented in a very harsh light, you know, and mm-hmm. and I just love this light so much. So thank you very much for this. Thank you,
Mataji, because Krishna is not, Krishna is, if Maya is very harsh, then how can Krishna be very benevolent?
So that's exactly my point when I said that, but as a corollary, therefore, this presentation also changes the light in which we see Krishna too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This, then otherwise, Maya should not be subservient to Krishna, in which case it challenges the omnipotency of Krishna, or it challenges the omnibenevolence of Krishna. So if
no, both, say this again. How is it challenging?
Either it, if Maya Devi is very rude and bad, either Krishna has no control over her, so that she exerts her control over us.
Mm-hmm.
So in which case, the omnipotence of Krishna is challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Or if Krishna has omnipotence and he allows Maya Devi to ruthlessly act upon us, then the omnibenevolence of Krishna is challenged.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
If so, if omnibenevolence and omnipotence of Krishna has to coexist, then Maya Devi cannot be a bad person. She has to be, she has to have a benevolent disposition. Just that if we understand it the right way, then our outlook towards the temptations, our outlook towards the towards the obstacles that we face, it changes. Because the person who is putting it in front of us, she is hoping, she is praying that we cross that hurdle. I mean, just to have that feeling is so empowering. Just that Maya is our topmost cheerleader. She is cheering us. Cross it. And of course, once we cross, she would put a bigger hurdle in front of us. But she hopes and wishes that we cross. Actually, because she wants to prepare us to go back home, back to Godhead.
Yeah. And this too, this presentation also makes more sense of what we hear when we hear that, oh, she has a thankless job. But it's only a person who has that compassionate nature would consider it a thankless job. So this presentation also makes sense of that statement too. Yeah, so, I mean, even these sentences that you just now spoke are so beautiful. So thank you again.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. You're always kind. Okay, so we will pause here. Thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We will continue this discussion next week. And hopefully, Krishna willing, maybe we will be able to complete. Maybe we may not. It's okay. Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Pad ki jai. Shri Bhakti Aloka ki jai. Hare Krishna.